Everybody, welcome to Falling Dominoes. It's Monday, June 1st, and I'm your host, Greg McGill, and my co-host here with us, the co-host of the show, Willie Redpill. Greg McGill and Willie Redpill. William Redpill. And tonight, we've got a really special guest. Dr. Alan Sobrowski is with us. Dr. Sobrowski, can you hear us?
I can now. I couldn't before. How are you, Greg?
Oh, good. Thank you so much for calling in. That is fantastic to have you on here. It's an honor.
My pleasure.
Well, hey, we're definitely looking forward to picking your brain tonight. You know, I don't even know where we could start. I do want to say, you said, I heard that you got a little bout of COVID-19 you were fighting for a minute.
Yeah, I had it. Actually, took about a month. It was a mild case. And independent of the origin of it or anything else, it was certainly the worst flu that I've ever had. But it was that's not really true. It was really bad for a few days. And then after that, it was just extremely achy with a lot of nausea and recovering from it. But it wasn't that sort of thing. But it did make me realize that if that was a mild case, I'm very thankful I never had one of the serious or critical ones.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean,
that's amazing. Yeah. You know, you're the first person that I've ever heard that has had this, that I've ever talked to that's had this.
Right.
There aren't an awful lot of them. It's like, you know, globally there aren't, even nationally there isn't a large number of them. And, you know, one of the really interesting things, you know, we can argue about the accuracy of the numbers, and I think everyone has different feelings on them, and no one thinks that the numbers are correct. But they're at least consistent over time. You know, they may be wrong in how they've been defined, but they're fairly consistent. I've watched them from day one, when there was something like about 400 cases globally and one death, to close to 7 million and about 380,000 deaths. So it's a fair amount. Even if you allow a 50% error factor, that's still fairly impressive. But the thing that's been intriguing is that if you look at the number of closed cases, not the total number of cases, but the closed cases, that is the ones that ended either in death or recovery, that about a month ago, 21% of the closed cases ended in death.
That's 21%?
Now 21%. That was about a month ago, and that was globally, and it varied from country to country.
Closed cases.
Yesterday, it's 12%.
Okay.
So it's been dropping. The percentage of deaths has been dropping pretty steadily for over a month.
Everything, a lot of things locked down, and there's a lot of civil unrest over this. I know
it is an economic disaster, and the Democratic governors and mayors are making it worse without any question. And they have a very distinct agenda. And the agenda is to take Trump's great success, which was in economics, and make it as bad as possible and prolong it as long as possible, up as close to the election as humanly possible. And all the rest of the everything else is taking place in the background. Violence, riots, and the rest of this are simply fueling that as well. I don't think there's any, you know, and it's no surprise that you look around and it's in the blue states and the blue cities that that's happening.
Right. These Democratic places, they're just run by Marxists, really. It's almost like it's communism, Bolshevik communism. Is this where it's going?
I don't think that's fair to communists. I don't think the communists would have anything to do with people like Jacob Frey up in the mayor of Minneapolis or Newsom.
Well, now, wouldn't they? He's a Jew, right? Jacob Frey?
I think he is, but I'm not sure.
We know that the Bolsheviks were about 85 to 87%, but they were Jewish.
Certainly the leadership.
Okay.
But what I think is more important than
the leadership is what I'm talking about. Absolutely.
It's the leadership, and that these people are basically very radical left-wing Democrats.
Right. I'm not saying you have to be a Jew to be a radical leftist. There's different factions of Judaism, of course, we all know that. But at the end of the day, they're all Jews first. And you do have Jewish heritage, don't you?
On my father's side.
On your father's side.
So you would have been considered a Jew in the Soviet Union, but you wouldn't be in Israel.
Very true. Although, as I tell people, the Marine indoctrination took precedence over everything like that. And in fact, wasn't even aware of my father's background until I guess it was very late in the 80s. I mean, neither one of us cared.
Oh, wow, that long, huh?
And
you weren't raised with any of those traditions then or anything like that?
My parents were divorced when I was 3 years old, and I met him when I was 22, when my regiment was getting ready to go to Vietnam. But he and I were talking, and he said, "Oh, by the way," it was up at the War College. He was staying at my house for a few days. He said, "Oh, by the way," and he said, "You know, my heritage is Jewish." And I said, "Oh, that's interesting." And then we went on to talk about something else, and it was like we gave it exactly the attention that both of us were concerned with, which was like 10 seconds. Just didn't matter.
Right. And I would still agree with that. Anybody who wants to, the truth is available to everyone. It doesn't matter if you have Jewish heritage or not, not at all. Yeah, but it actually gives you a little more credibility when you talk about the things like, 9/11 being an Israeli Mossad operation and things like that. You get to claim you're Jewish. I mean, how can I be anti-Semitic? I'm Jewish.
On the other hand, Marine heritage is not optional, and it's not negotiable, and that's the one that's controlling.
The Marine in you. Is that what you say? Yeah.
Does that mean you have to be loyal to Jews as a Marine?
No, you have to be loyal to the Marine Corps.
Right. So but that's who your first loyalty would be to.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay, but from the back end, now we have this mass loyalty to Israel that seems to come through the military, because the military's been deployed into all these conflicts. And now they would have to say, "Oh, we just destroyed all these countries, and our own countries are being destroyed now as a result of us going over there and fighting." And that's a hell of a thing to reconcile.
It is. And you know what's
and they're training our police too, you guys. And it's coming out, and it's that knee on the neck thing. That's Israeli police training. That's training right there.
Okay.
And that's what killed that guy, right?
Okay. So I don't know anything about this. I just heard it. But does anybody know about this? Anyone have any details about this?
About which? Details what?
About the training of the police, the Israeli training
I've read a bunch of stuff about it, and like it's usually they'll send chiefs or they'll send higher ups to Israel, but they also send Israel sends trainers here to show them techniques and things like that. That's been documented. I don't have anything in front of me or anything like that to go through to that, but I mean obviously you can just look at you see like how they treat the Palestinians, and it just seems like that they're trying to make us all like that. The training is an issue. It's definitely an issue. Why the police are acting like the way they do.
Yes. and want to understand.
But you know, the thing that the Israelis are missing on it, or that our police are missing on it, is that, and you understand that I'm not a fan of Israel.
I understand that. I appreciate that, Yes, we're not either.
It requires not only a level of training and equipment on part of the police, but a degree of willingness, a political willingness on the part of the leadership, political leadership, to use them. And what you have in the United States is that you have the police having a lot of Israeli training, but you have a left-wing political leadership in a lot of these cities and states that is unwilling to use the police. I mean, if there was the Israeli political leadership with the American police trained on an Israeli model, these riots would have been over in the first 24 hours.
That is a really good point. They would be squashed. Now, I heard Trump today had a video conference with all the governors and was pretty much calling them weak and to use the police that way to crush these riots. You know, and maybe that's what has to happen. I mean, I hate to say it, but I'm all for protest, but it just seems like these people are. This isn't. That's not what it's about. And
well,
also,
you know,
I
live in Mississippi now, and I've been down here for about 25 years. Originally from Michigan and a dozen other states in between over the years. And Mississippi, of course, was where the Freedom Riders were in the early 60s, and it was the focus of Alabama, was the focus of the early civil rights movement and the rest of it. And there have been several protest marches down here. There have been zero violence. None, absolutely none.
That's great. Yeah, there I live kind of in the country, and they're same here. Zero, nothing.
Yeah, peaceful marches, peaceful demonstrations, absolutely no violence, no streets being blocked, no buildings being torched. Nothing.
That's a big city thing. That's happening in the big cities. It's not happening. Said before, Dr. Sobrowski, right? The Democrat controlled big cities where they're letting this stuff happen.
You've had Republican governors here for a dozen years. You've got a Republican governor now and a Republican attorney general. You got a Democratic mayor in the city, but it's the capital city, and the Republican governor would be very set the tone very clearly. And I think you'd find, if you looked at the riots around the country, I can't think of any right now that's taking place in an area with a Republican governor.
In a big city
with a Republican mayor. I can't think of any.
Mm. Right. I can. If anybody is a caller, if anybody can think of one, or anybody has is there one where it's not a Democrat?
There may be, statistically, there has to be one out there, but I've never heard of it. I haven't heard of it. Right. I can't think of one. All of the cities that I've heard mentioned, seen mentioned on Twitter and Facebook and on the news programs, I use the term news very loosely, you understand. But everything I've seen, it's a city with a Democrat for a mayor, and I think all the states are those that have Democrats as governors.
Yeah, I'm near Cleveland, and Cleveland had a lot of violence. They were burning police cars and things like that downtown. They're all Democrat-controlled.
You have a Democrat mayor. And in the cities, the governors really only get involved in this when the National Guard is called in, and there's very few of the states that have actually sent the National Guard in. So it's mostly the mayors in the cities that are taking the responsibility or abdicating their responsibility for it. And what's happening, and they're all Democrat mayors, every single one of them.
Right.
Even
here in Ohio, we have a Republican governor, but he's a very weak Republican. He's not a real Republican, just obviously by his. And I think he leans more towards that anyway. He's not going to do anything for Cleveland, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think he's what you call classically a rhino.
Right. There you go. That's what he is, DeWine. Yeah. A wino, yeah. Rhino, de rhino. Yeah, yeah.
Don't you guys,
that's what it is, de rhino. That's the Ohio governor, that clown.
Yeah, these people really want to prolong this as long as possible, because the closer it gets to the election, the more of this will rub off on Trump and his administration.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't mean that he's responsible for it. He's not. But it means that there's a natural habit on the part of anyone in the electorate to look at the president, at the chief executive, and say, if the economy has gone to hell and I'm unemployed and my city is burning, why aren't you fixing it? Now, the fact he might not be able to.
They're going
to
say, why isn't Trump fixing this? That's what they're going to say.
Yeah, yeah. So even if you've got a Democrat for a governor and a Democrat for a mayor who are having direct roles in it, you know, the thing is, when you're dealing with a mob, you know, you can't placate it. You can't negotiate with it. And you should.
They're mindless.
You should. You know,
I agree.
You know, I've never been an advocate of just going in and, you know, and opening fire on everyone in sight. But at the point, the cutting point for Minneapolis should have been when the mob went into the police station. And at that point, the police should have been authorized to open fire to protect their station and to drive the mob away.
Right.
That was it. That would have broken the riot. One way or the other, it would have broken the riot. And it would have, that would
been
have been
a lot of dead bodies. You know, and to go back a little bit, I saw Candace Owens, she posted, this is where I saw it off of her website, on her Facebook page, that the autopsy was done. You know, the autopsy was done on that guy, and he wasn't killed by the knee on the neck. That's not what did it. It was, like, drugged and some other, I don't remember what it was, but it wasn't that.
Drug overdose.
Was a stroke from it, or, I don't know if that's true or not, the autopsy.
That's what
it's the same thing. Because that guy in New York City, Eric Green or whatever it was, you know, it's the same thing. You know, it's just over
it's
and over and over. And, you know, and it's so hypocritical. You know,
why does the media only care when it's a black criminal who's killed? It's the only time they care, by a white cop.
Because the media is effectively, with a partial exception of Fox News, the mainstream media, electronic and print, is just an adjunct of the Democratic National Committee.
All right. Well, I disagree. I would say it's more of an of the Jewish power that's behind everything.
Because they're all
the owners of that.
The left side of the dialectic. There's two dialectics, and those dialectics are ultimately. I think they're ultimately moving us towards the same direction, right? So.
That's the thing. This right and left.
It's with the right. Then you have the communist Bolshevik dialectic, which is in cahoots with the Democrat. And so you're forced. It's satanic because you're forced to pick one of these two sides, and because you just don't really have any other choice except to actually start looking into this stuff and researching it, and then
It's always the same tribe behind
sides a little bit. And so you have people on the left that are trying to call out the Zionist power, and they're correct about this because the Zionist power, and usually they're, you know, talking about Palestinians and they're concerned about the Palestinians. And definitely I'm very concerned about the poor Palestinians. I've especially become a lot more sympathetic towards them since I've understood what's going on. Not just in Palestine, because Palestine is...
they shoot themselves in the foot all the time, Palestinians do.
All of the war that we're waging over there is creating refugee crises that are... And all the refugees are going into Europe. And so they're changing Europe completely. They're turning Europe into Arabia, which was the plan from Khaled in 1925.
Could you speak a little louder, Will, or a little closer to the microphone, maybe?
Yeah, Willie, we're having trouble hearing you, buddy.
Oh, okay. That's too bad.
Yeah,
okay. Is that better?
Better.
Okay. Yep. So, Zionist power, creating war, creating refugee crises, sending them everybody up to Europe. Everybody's in up in arms about that. It's another dialectic problem. They blame, you know, the left-wing government, and that's partly true. But above the left-wing government, you know, there's the right and...
You're
and
still a little quiet. I don't know if... You keep straying from the mic, or maybe there's a sweet spot that's tough to stay in.
Is that better?
That better? Right there is better, louder, right, Gregory?
I got off the speakerphone.
Don't use speakerphone on the radio anymore. Come on, that's not professional, Will. We can't have that here. Come on.
Zing him. There you go. We got Dr. Sobrowski on here today, everybody. I mean, this is a big boy. Boy, are you just a, yeah, you're just a plethora of information.
Yes.
I love having you on here. Thanks for coming on. If anybody wants to call in, it's 855-492-6049. If you want to talk with Dr. Alan Sobrowski and Will, let us know. Now, keep going with what you were saying about the Zionist thing.
Yeah. Let me cut to the chase with my question. Everybody already knows about this. Everybody already knows about the refugee crisis. Everybody already knows
right. That
that's the result of Zionism. And Bolshevism is internal subversion. So you have external
right. Subversion,
you have internal subversion. And they're working hand in hand, but they appear to oppose each other in terms of our political dialectic that every single country has. And
it's a false dichotomy, right? That's what you're saying.
So everybody,
it's a false dichotomy. It's not real.
Right. Everybody's half right and half wrong. And even somebody like Alex Jones could switch the narrative at the top and blame it on the Nazis or something instead of the Zionists.
Oh, yeah, he's still blaming
things on
Germany.
Right. So that's enough to make somebody in Antifa go, oh yeah, it's the white supremacist. And so they're coming after this non-existent white supremacist. And then the
Nazis are Hollywood fiction.
Gone away.
They never existed. We know that.
Well, I don't know. If they were there, it's like, are you serious? Like, what are you coming out of your KKK or in 2017 at Charlottesville or something? You got to be kidding me. This is staged. You know. So now that happens, and then the media goes after. But I guess my question is to put it in the context of now, and that is this going after Antifa. And this more government ramping up of going after these people that are Antifa and are confused about who the villain is. They think it's the white supremacist, but it's the communist Bolshevik Zionist dialectic, really is what it is.
Right.
And so, what's going to happen? Because they're going to go after them first, and they're going to they're manufacturing consent for doing this to the people.
We're going
on the
after
right.
Antifa,
yeah,
right?
Go after Antifa, make them a terrorist organization.
Yeah.
What are they going to do about the Patriot? Right. Okay. So they're going to do that first.
What about BLM too?
Right. So that's part of it. The BLM, Antifa,
yeah,
it's all the same thing. Right. It's the left wing cannon fodder that they're using. That Yuri Bezmenov said. And 35 years ago was going to, they were just going to be thrown, taken into camps and they
useful
were
idiots.
Be, yeah. Useful idiots. Right.
So, what's your question for Dr. Sobrowski about that?
Do you see the same thing I'm seeing? And that is just setting the precedent so that they can go after the actual patriot that doesn't want the new world order, because they all want the new world order. It's just one of them is under the UN, WHO, World Health Organization, World Bank, IMF. The other one is under Sanhedrin 666 and Shabbat Lubavitch, right? Am I wrong? How is it going to play out, right? If it's on the right, it's under Shabbat Lubavitch and the Sanhedrin 666. I that's just what I'm seeing at this moment. What are your thoughts on it?
Dr. Sobrowski, are you there?
Was that a question for me? I got lost in that just a second.
I know. It was a long question, but yeah. It was
Sorry.
A question for you. I know. It was a bit of a long one, but can you rephrase just the last part, Will?
Yeah.
Well, I'm basically just wondering I'm just wondering if what's happening now, that I'm not saying that this is what it is, but when you see that there's interest on both the right and the left of installing the new world order, right? Then how do you explain that they're setting a precedent right now with Antifa and manufacturing
Antifa out, and where do you think it's going?
Right? Yeah. I mean, where is it going to end up going? Is it going to, because they're going to implement measures in order, they're draconian measures in people's telephones and surveillance and all this to identify Antifa. Everybody on the right's cheering. Yeah, get them.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, yeah.
what's going to happen later? Who are they going to come after later? This is exactly what happened with 9/11, right? Everybody on the right said, take away our civil rights so that you can get a terrorist, right? And now they're doing the same thing.
Well, I think you have to start at first principles, is that if you want something that will get the United States off the movement of Zionist control, whether it's international or national, it doesn't really matter, you need a third party, because the two parties themselves are basically two sides of the same coin. Internationally,
we all agree on that.
I never had much hope in Trump internationally, simply because he rose to power and prominence in the New York and Hollywood communities. Those are Jewish dominated communities these days. Mm-hmm. They are anyway, and his friends are that, and he had to. I mean, this is whether he did that as a matter of pragmatic survival or a matter of emotional and family connection, you know. Ivanka converted to Judaism, and you know, he has family who are Jewish.
Yeah, but that's political theater. That doesn't matter. I'm talking about, it's all policy and who's appointing his judges and things like that that's important. I understand why he has to appear to be very, he has to have something to keep people from calling him an anti-Semite if he moves at all. And so having him in his family is a pretty good way to do it.
Well,
anti-Semite stuff is a bunch of nonsense.
Yeah, the real difference between the two parties, if there is one, is in domestic affairs. And the Israelis really don't care about that. They want, it's like having two tribes. One tribe is called the Republicans and the other tribe is called the Democrats, and they can battle each other, and how they decide to settle tribal disputes within their area really doesn't matter. What the Israelis want is the United States as an obedient 800-pound gorilla in the world arena on their side.
And their cash cow.
And both parties have been compromised to the degree that that's what they'll give them.
There you go. So we can agree that Israel is running the whole show behind the scenes. You know, how much they control Trump is up for debate.
Pretty much. I don't see him as being controlled. I've lost a lot of friends on this point, but I think that he's an enthusiastic participant.
He is
the best president Israel has had, and they've owned most of them. For half a century, they've owned most of them. But there's no question at all about that. But besides
they're split even amongst the Jews in Israel. They're all split about it. Some of them like him, some of them don't. Most of them don't. They say he's taking them for a ride. But they're just as split as we are here internally. Aren't they right now prosecuted, or Netanyahu is under indictment or something for corruption? They've got their own internal struggles going on.
Didn't that go away or something?
No,
was Omer before. Then, you know, the joke in Israel is sort of like, what, we have a prime minister who isn't being indicted? Where did he go wrong?
Okay, so it's all just political theater.
That was such arrogance. Oh, my God.
The big problem for us.
It is amazing. They throw it in front of our faces.
Yeah.
The big problem for us is that in addition to the political leadership, Congress being basically bought and paid for, the DNC and RNC both being in Apex Corner, there's been a big change over the past 10 years in two areas. One is that that's gone down to state level. There are now about almost two-thirds of the states have passed laws criminalizing BDS. Some of them have gone even further in terms of education, like the Education Act that Trump just signed. Several states already.
Yeah, that's
that.
Scary.
Yeah.
That's scary as hell.
Ten years ago, except for California and New York and Florida, they really had no influence in the states. Now they've got them in almost more than a majority. And the second thing that increasingly the senior leadership of the armed forces, the generals and admirals of the armed forces, are increasingly pro-Israel. And there's a very simple reason for this. They have to be confirmed by the Senate. They have to be confirmed on their rank and position by the Senate. The Senate is owned by AIPAC. And, you know, the generals and admirals who are ambitious, and most of them are, you know, they pay attention to things. They're better educated than they used to be. They follow these things. And they understand that if they want to put on that third and fourth star, if they want to become chief of staff of the Army or commandant of the Marine Corps, they will take the correct positions. And they can't sidestep it.
Well, that's so the only way to move ahead is to pledge your allegiance to Jews. That's all. I mean, what is Israel? It's the Jewish state, right? So
that's the only way.
Then let's say what it is. You have to pledge your allegiance to Jews first, or you don't. You're not moving up in the ranks.
It's not Jews. They have to pledge it to Israel as a state. I mean, they can like.
What is Israel? Israel is the Jewish state. Those are all Jews.
There are a fair number of Jews and some Israelis who don't like what Israel is.
Oh, we all know that. They're split. They're split amongst,
That's true.
They're fighting amongst themselves. Yeah, absolutely. There are anti-Zionist Jews, but most of them are just protesting the timing and the draft. You know, they believe their Antichrist is coming later and it's too early. Israel's showing its fangs to the world too soon, that's what they think.
I would like to get your perspective on this, Alan. So in terms of the dialectic, so I have seen a lot of these anti-Zionist Jews, and I don't know where they stand on Bolshevism and communism. No idea. They never say anything about it that I've seen. And sometimes it just seems they're indifferent to it or it doesn't matter or something. But I have yet. I wanted to get some insight into, it's been difficult because I don't know, maybe they support it because it's like, Zionism or they're like Jews for refugees and they're like waving everybody over to Europe. That's probably my naive assessment. But
that's a really good question because I follow the English language websites in Israel like I do in those in a lot of countries. And that's something that's almost never been raised. I'm trying to think of it if I've ever heard it raised.
It is a good question. Do they ever acknowledge Bolshevism? Do they ever acknowledge communism and the Jewish role in it?
Well, you know, a lot of the most extreme Israelis are Russian and American Jews who went to Israel. And a lot of them were at least socialists. And, you know, I've heard a lot of different discussion about the line of demarcation between a democratic socialist and a authoritarian socialist, you know, a Bolshevik or communist, whatever you want to call it. But they're all Marxists.
It's not national socialism like Germany, at least
philosophically there are now Marxism is sort of like you know if you've ever had the misfortune to read Karl Marx's Das Kapital in the original German I did that in Vienna and I will tell you it very nearly drove me to enough drink that I couldn't finish my research because it's
even for German, reading gibberish for two years.
It's really
German gibberish.
When you get into the seventh subordinating conjunction, you start to lose track with where the thing was going at the beginning.
Wow. Yeah.
But
it's so convoluted.
I couldn't even get
that whole ideology.
Like 80 pages of it.
But socialists looking at Marx is sort of like Protestants looking at the Bible. You can have dozens of different sects and differentiations, and they focus on different aspects of it. You know, you can cherry pick it, and they do cherry pick it. And I don't know what that means. You know, I think you have to be a believer
in
socialism in Marxist socialism. You have to be a believer before you can really sort that out. Like some Catholic colleagues of mine say, when they listen to Baptists discussing things, they say, well, there's First Baptists and there's Primitive Baptists and there's Fundamentalist Baptists, and it keeps going on. There's about a dozen different groups of Baptists. They say, what's the difference? And I said, they pick different parts of the scripture. Well, different socialist parties and different socialist movements emphasize different aspects of Marx and subsequent socialist writers, but they generally share one thing in common, and that is a belief in a collective, some kind of a collective good.
Collectivism, that was the problem anyway. It's not really communism.
Yeah, that there is a collective good, and that you incline toward, not incline toward, but you accept a central control of the economy, and in some of the variants, a central control of society.
But Germany proved that was a good, it could be done correctly. If you have nationalism first, then it can be done right.
Because of
they proved socialism without beyond a doubt that it can be done right.
There's no usury, and that's the key. Can make it
right, exactly. Boom, you just hit it. It's usury. That's the bottom. They abolished usury, and that's the difference right there. And that nobody even addresses that issue. That's the culprit behind everything is usury. Yeah. It's their interest. You got to abolish interest rates, period. And no interest. Yeah. An interest-free economy.
Otherwise,
we're stuck. Economy. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's a huge, how do you even approach that? How do you do that? Now,
you know,
Hitler made it. Hitler made it possible by death.
Not communism, but it was a workers' paradise, and it was like the country started to be run by the peasants, and they just
why they burned the country from end to end.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the only reason they did
that.
Because they were doing too good. They were doing too well.
Yeah.
God forbid that the normal people could have a lifestyle like that. They had the best lifestyle in the entire world at the time. Just the normal worker. The entire world. It was the best freaking lifestyle. So, I mean, that's why I don't believe in Nazis. I just don't believe in them at all. I don't think they ever existed. There's no such thing. It's a Hollywood fiction made up Jewish mythology thing. They never called themselves Nazi. So the whole thing's made up. It was a very prosperous place. You're immensely prosperous compared to what we even lived in, and more free than we live in now today. But anyway, we're digressing. We're not talking about Germany in World War II. I just got off on a tangent.
Well, and it was
I got off on a tangent.
Solution too, you know. So
well, there's a solution. It's getting rid of usury.
Well, because you have to consider what they were coming out of. So it was
right.
Hey, we're lifting the
what
people
we're going
back
into.
Up. We're lifting our people back up, and every other country
well,
in the world
that's
what
we're going
into
now, right? Is a
any other country
Weimar
that tries to make that model. Any other country that tries, yes, and any other country that tries to take that model is instantly labeled a Nazi. Oh my God!
Right. Libya. Look at Libya and Gaddafi, right?
Right.
He was labeled like that.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. For years and years, they demonized him. I'm so disgusted with our government, our media.
Look what Hillary Clinton did to Libya and all that.
Now. Yeah. Yeah. They bayoneted him right in his rear side. And tortured him.
I mean,
and
she laughed about it.
For what? Because he had an irrigation system. He had an independent dinar, gold-backed currency.
The place was becoming too prosperous. The normal person was doing too well.
He was giving $50,000 to couples to get married, another $5,000 to if they had a child. This
once
was
again, showing socialism can work if it's done right.
Right. But when your goal is what we do in the United States, and that is to ethnically cleanse you and replace you, and then you use tax money from the people you're ethnic cleansing to be socialist towards the people that you're bringing in to ethnic cleanse you, of course it's not going to work. Yeah. You know.
Right. Well, I definitely think we're a target now, right, Dr. Sobrowski? I mean, just white people are.
Well, to say that we're a target is probably an understatement.
There you go.
being completely annihilated. I mean, it's just been happening for 100 years. You know, I go back to World War I as sort of the benchmark spot. I know it goes back further than that, but that's really when the Fed book got started in 1913, then 1914, World War I, and then the Bolshevik
reserve coming in all right at the same time.
Flooded.
There's no coincidence.
Yeah, Yeah, it's so sad, man. It's so sad. It's just so sad to watch people just so hating on the victim, like in such a just virulent way. It's so evil and demonic. I just really wish that these Jews, that these Sanhedrin Jews, that are, you know, they're the ones who are really in charge. That's that the Chabad Lubavitchers. I think I hope that they have a change of heart. I hope that they realize what's going on. I hope that they. I hope
we're
that
working
they
out of that Talmud.
Do what's in Revelation 2:9-3:9,
right?
In Revelation 2:9-3:9, they finally realize that Jesus is Christ, is Lord, and they finally say, okay. You know, it's just, how much longer does humanity have to suffer from all of this? Why does it have to continue this way?
Well, I think that's a good question. What can we do?
What good is it going to do?
I don't know. What do you think, Dr. Sobrowski? Is getting rid of usury part of it? I mean, I'd say that's one of the biggest. I'd say that's the biggest thing of all.
That's probably incidental to my point of view.
Really? Okay. Yeah.
Very incidental. You know, I'm not an economist. I'm a military strategist. And you know, you're talking about something that I don't really pay attention to, because you know, you can have usury, you cannot have it, but that's not the sort of thing that people will go to the barricades for.
Right.
They won't.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's even acknowledged as the problem. Even though it's been shown historically that when they get rid of it, the places thrive and prosper like never before.
If they can do it, I think ironically one of the things that professor of mine told me way back in graduate school, and God, it's been nearly half a century now that I think about it.
Wow.
He said, during the medieval period and afterwards, Jews were prevented from owning land and serving in the
that's
military.
The Byzantine solution. Absolutely.
Yep. And so
that's the only thing that's ever worked.
The only thing that they were able to do was go into finance. And ironically, by going into finance, they ended up owning the soldiers and the knights.
That's how you can control it. You control the money. Yeah. What else do you need to control? They don't care. It's the only thing that matters.
And ironically, one of the very few countries that managed to sidestep that was the Austrian Empire, the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And I didn't realize that.
Same fight.
Well, I realized that when I was doing some research on it, and what they ended up doing is that they had generals in the Imperial Army who were Jews. And they were ennobled, got the fun in their name, you know, so the equivalent of being knighted, and bound them to the Kaiser, to the emperor. And that seemed to work very well for them. Unfortunately, nothing else did. And so the whole place collapsed, but it was an interesting try, a very interesting try.
That was Austria-Hungary?
Yeah, Austria-Hungary, before World War I, yeah.
Ah.
And it worked. It actually worked.
Yeah. What was his name?
Those are solutions. Those are real solutions.
He was killed by Gavrilo Princip, who was a Black Hand, which was communist...
Actually, he was a nationalist. It had nothing to do with communists. He was a Serbian nationalist. But they were interested in creating a greater. No, they were. He wasn't. They had nothing to do with it. They were with Bolshevism. They were a strongly nationalist group. But they were interested.
Yeah, I've heard that he was a Serbian dude that did it.
I did hear the Serbian nationalist thing.
And it was responsible to Serbian military intelligence. And what they wanted was a greater Serbia, and they got it in Yugoslavia after World War I. That's what it was. That was their goal. And they ran the Balkans.
I always jumped off from right there. Yeah, the Balkan Wars. I mean, it's still crazy shit over that area, right? I bet. Wow. I'm glad we're talking about solutions instead of just complaining. You know, really, that's what we need. How do you...
you know, approach these things, though? You're not even allowed to identify it. What?
Yeah, now you can't even identify it.
Well, that's the thing. You're not allowed to even identify the problem. We're labeled all kinds of awful names. Yeah, if I had Jewish heritage like you do, Dr. Sobrowski, that'd be the first thing I'd be talking about. I'd be like, oh, yeah, just to attack them, because it's about the only way you can without being called all kinds of terrible names.
Yeah.
You're an anti-Semite. Well, they would just call you a self-hating Jew.
Yeah, there are some interesting differences, I suppose.
Yeah.
Well, that's really interesting, that the military strategy, and I'd like to know a little bit more about Gavrilo Princip and the Serbian nationalists and what their motivation was in killing Franz Ferdinand and his wife, Sophie. Yeah.
Their motivation was very simple. They thought it would bring about a world war.
Well, it did.
Bringing about
a world war would have the effect of breaking the Austro-Hungarian Empire up, and by breaking it up, that Serbia would have a chance to achieve its objective, a greater Serbia. And they were correct. They won.
Right, but I think that there was a larger hand at play, and that was the World Revolution folks. So there had been the French Revolution.
Look, the origins of World War One is something I know backwards and forwards, and it had absolutely nothing to do with Serbian military intelligence or their goals on this.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. Oh, I believe you.
Oh, yeah, I do too. I know you're an expert in this, Dr. Sobrowski. That's why I just love the information we're getting from you. I'm taking it as like,
my understanding is, World War One was all part of a greater, Zionist plan to destroy the monarchies of Europe. And that was just one of them, Austria-Hungary. And so they used the Serbians as a kind of a... Just like they used Poland and their ultra-nationalist interest in World War II, just like they leveraged
that. We're always told
that
they're dictators and that they're, everybody's a dictator. If they start doing, you're a dictator or whatever, and monarchies or just having one, obviously democracy is a joke now when more than half the people are just completely, so now we have, because democracy is mob rule, right? It literally is.
Well, and if you don't have an electoral college, then that just removes it. This makes it
right.
More of a mob.
Exactly. The electoral college is the only thing saving us from that right now. That LA and New York City could decide everything.
Yeah.
That would be, someone showed me a map on the demographics that if you took a look at this between California and New York State. You pretty much have the outcome of most elections determined if you didn't have the Electoral College.
That's a lifesaver for just getting. So one thing we can, I'd say about Trump, regardless of how much we think he's being controlled by Jews, is that he is the most nationalist president we've had in a long, long, long time. So it's at least planting some more seeds of nationalism, which we need. To start taking care of our own here first, and putting America, I'm having hope for Trump. That's all it is.
Both.
I have a lot of hope for him.
Yeah. He does things that are nationalist and then does things that are globalist. I guess you can be both. I don't know. It's an interesting.
He's always got to be making deals.
Alan, is it all right if I wanted to ask you about Civil War? And the North and the South, and the Confederacy, and I am really curious about how the South was, were they? Because I always growing up had this impression. I don't know what gave me that impression. That it was like David Duke or something, or maybe it was, I don't know, the KKK or something. But it seemed like the South people were Jew-wise in the South, and so what is the What is the kind of...
They owned the most of the slaves,
what's the nature
and they owned all
that?
The slave trade.
Right. So, what was really happening with the Confederacy and the Civil War? What was
there were so few Jews in the South that it really didn't matter. Shelby Foote was probably one of the best historians on the Civil War. He was from the South, and he made a comment once. He said, everyone who says that the Civil War was only about slavery is wrong, but everyone who says that slavery had nothing to do with the Civil War is also wrong.
Yeah.
I would want that, yeah.
One of the more intriguing books I read was on the origins of the Civil War, and it was written in 1861, and it juxtaposed two slave systems. It says the plantation slavery of the South versus the industrial slavery of the North. It said that the difference is that you look at the life of the indentured servants working in mines and factories, you know, and hocked to the company store forever in the North, that they lived worse and their lives were valued less than that of the average plantation slave in the South.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And that was really one of the interesting things.
It was a worse form of slavery up living in the North.
Wow.
It was really a very simple thing that for many Southerners. And I've learned more of this since I lived in Mississippi than I did before, but I mean, academically, I knew a fair part of it. It really was about states' rights. And, you know, what was really intriguing is that so many of the senior Confederate generals, like Lee, neither owned slaves nor supported slavery as an institution.
Right.
Now, people like Jefferson Davis, president of the Confederacy, you know, certainly supported slavery and owned slaves, and so did a lot of others in the Confederacy, individuals of power, but there were a lot of people who didn't, and to whom it was just not relevant. And most of the soldiers, most of the people who went out to fight, were not fighting blindly for, you know, for the slave owner so that some wealthy person in Charleston or Birmingham could keep the slaves on his plantation. They were fighting because there was an army invading their states. And I think one of the classic statements of this was by Stonewall Jackson after he took command of a substantial part of the troops in Northern Virginia. He told his troops, he said, "I've always been a Union man like most of you, but you know they're invading us, Lee, when Lee turned down command of the Union Army, which he was offered just before Virginia seceded, you know, he made a comment to Blair that he never thought he would see a day when the President of the United States raised an army to invade his own country. You know, basically the cause of the Civil War could partly slavery, partly a sense on the part of the South that they were being outproduced and eventually would be outvoted in both the Senate and the House in the North. But the big thing of it was that Lincoln acted too hastily, because even at the time that he called up the troops, four of the states that eventually comprised the Confederacy, including Virginia, which was crucial, had not yet seceded. And of the others that had already seceded, only South Carolina was really content with it. A lot of the others were starting to have second and third and fourth thoughts. And if Lincoln had simply done nothing and let the situation settle and diffuse, there's a very good chance we could have avoided the Civil War, avoided 650,000 to 700,000 dead, probably twice that many maimed, avoided a century of ill will across the history. That there is a time to act decisively, and there is a time to wait, and he should have waited. You know, slavery was a dying institution. Slavery was a dying institution.
It was
economically not profitable. It was economically not profitable. And as the
And as the industrial revolution spread into the agricultural field, you know, the value of slavery, the use of slaves as an institution was going. You know, and
it's going away on its own.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was understood by a lot of people. Now, there were some diehard people in the South, plantation owners, who wouldn't let that happen. But there was an awful lot more who would. You know, you cannot act
just for states' rights. It was really about states' rights, sovereignty.
Well, like the original Constitution, I've told people, I said, you know, the constitutional order of the Republic, as defined by the framers, ended at Appomattox in 1865. And what
so
you had instead
of different, we're under a different constitution now. Is what you're saying?
Sure. I mean, what you had instead of a voluntary union of sovereign states was a top-down order focused increasingly in Washington, in which today the states basically have the right to issue driver's licenses, license plates, and their own taxes, and not much more. And I, sir, am past my bedtime, and I'm going to bed. Thank you for having me on.
Hey,
you take care of yourself.
Thank you for being on.
Call again.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Dabrowski, everybody. Wow, what a mind. Was this
guys, fight.
It's a pleasure and an honor.
All right. Wow. Yeah, man. You know, it was good to get an hour from somebody like that. You know.
Wow. Yeah. I looked him up beforehand. I was just floored by his credentials. And you sent that over to me, reading that.
Yeah, huge,
it took
me
a while to get through of all of it. What a guy. Exactly. Yeah, that's really amazing that we had him on. And that was really interesting information about the South. And that's just such a linchpin. I want to look more into what happened in Appomattox in 1865. Was that when...
I didn't want to come off with too much Jew hating when I was talking to him, because that's not really what he wants to do. But it has to be pointed out that the real slave bringers were the Jews. They owned every ship. They owned every company. The auctions were only closed on the Sabbath and Jewish high holidays. That's when and plus it was all just the rich people that could have them. And mostly it was Jews that owned slaves. Because most of the middle and working classes of white people, they had nothing to do with slavery. They couldn't own a slave. That was for rich people, and most of them, unfortunately, were Jews. So why is it that whites just get blamed for this? White people are blamed for slavery. When very few whites had slaves. A lot of Jews did. Most of them did.
Well, the people at the top have to have.
I don't
want to
go there with it.
Right, but the people at the top have to have somebody to throw under the bus for it. Still to this day, and you see that happening in corporations. Because what they're doing is they're pushing cultural Marxism onto employees through, you know, things like diversity training and understand your white privilege and just constantly berating them about and kind of encouraging all of this violence that's happening in the inner cities. The corporations, the CEOs of corporations, ones that you know very well, are encouraging this violence indirectly, not directly, but they're just throwing so much sympathy for you know, people because of this incident that happened. And you know, I can't make any sense of why this. I really can't make any sense of why this police officer with a camera on him, he hold this guy down on his neck for 8 minutes, not just put him in the car.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that's come out that they work at the same security at the same bar, and they know each other. So
let me finish. Something interesting to note. It makes no sense. None of that makes sense. It's just crazy. But at the same time, it's also interesting to know, if we're talking about Minneapolis, right? Minneapolis, Minnesota. Now, Minnesota is Ilhan Omar's territory. And it was only a year ago that Ilhan Omar was saying that the white man is responsible for all of the deaths in this country. You remember?
Oh, wow.
Last
year, I don't. But
the white man is responsible for all of the deaths in this country. Okay, I just have to repeat it because she makes me sick.
White guilt.
And
constantly.
And that's exactly how she sounds. And she's wrong, and she's lying. because the statistics do not show this. The statistics show that that black on white crime is far greater and is ignored by the media and is ignored by people like Ilhan Omar.
The media only focuses on the one thing. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, I have this the graph right in front of me.
Yeah, I saw that. We're losing you.
It's about what the truth is.
Right. Well, black on black crime is probably the most going on. Nobody cares about that. And then there's black on white, which is a lot more than white on black. White on black is the lowest one, and it's the only one focused on in the media.
Right.
It's the only one. There's no. They don't care about. Is it Minnesota that pretty blonde girl was shot by a Minnesota cop? I know he went to jail for it. But there was no writing afterwards. Nobody made a big deal. The media barely covered it.
Right. Yeah. This is the sad and disgusting reality that we are living in right now.
Yeah,
it's really awful
right now.
Yeah.
We have to. How do we make changes? I
just sent you the stats. It is interesting. You can just look at the graph. Everybody gets bored with the numbers.
Let me see if I might have that. Let me see here. Boom, boom. Oh, I have that one. That's what I was going to say. The yellow is the white on black. Yep, I have that same one. I have that same chart. It's the blue and yellow and red. Right.
I think I probably put Mr. Sobrowski off because I get too heated. It's funny because
he only planned on an hour. Okay, he's an elderly gentleman. He's in his like 80s. Yeah, you didn't run him out
really?
Of there. You did good.
Right.
You had some great questions. You get a little long winded in your questions, but they were really good questions.
Yeah.
So don't worry about that. He was. I was lucky to get.
But I can't even get one tenth as heated. I can't even get one tenth as heated with my wife because, and she before she's like, ah. She's like, dude, like, you need to, like, you know, you're going to, like, make me, like, want to lay down and die.
Oh, I drive my wife nuts. We're in here. I go and I use the bedroom as my office for this podcast. I got a desk and everything right here. And I, you know, my mic and everything. I'll put up it. And then, but it's, I got to keep the door shut because it drives her nuts. And I basically drive her crazy because I talk all the time about this stuff, and I'm sure she has a passing interest in it. She's not really that interested in it. Not on blameless.
Not everybody.
It's not for everybody.
Too much.
You're right. It is. Yeah, it's not for us to get into political analysis today. It's not for everybody because it is a lot of shit. You have to be able to really, you know, delve in and.
What's the solution? What's the solution?
Yeah, maybe we got
to
have people talking about this stuff.
You got
to
figure out how to identify the problem.
Well, you know, the theme of this show always is don't believe what you're not allowed to question. Okay, so we're not allowed to question those things. And
that is such a great phrase. Oh, that's what you just got to keep telling everybody.
Well, yeah, that's what
you
have to. That's the theme of the show. It literally is. We're going to close
and
the show with that from now
figure
on.
It out.
Right.
Even some of them, man. You mentioned the J word. Just people.
Right. It turns people right off.
Uh-huh.
It's just right there. You're a Nazi. You're an anti-Semite. You're a this and that. They're God's chosen people. All this stuff gets thrown at you right away. You get labeled all kinds of things for even bringing it up. You can't. They know very well, and they control all the discourse on both sides. No matter what kind of political leaning that they have, they're all Jews first, every one of them. Now, somebody like Dr. Sobrowski, he's got Jewish heritage, but he knows nothing. He wasn't raised that way, nothing. So he doesn't even know anything about that, you know. So it's not everybody who is a Jew is evil or anything like that. It doesn't work that way.
No, in fact, some of my favorite people in the world are Jews that are just really dedicated to the truth, and you know, like me, I believe I probably have some Jewish heritage in my bloodline down there.
That's not what's
really
important.
I have seen some names in the past.
Yeah, right. I never noticed any
in
mine
in the genealogy. But
right, Right, that's great.
So
my grandmother never mentioned it ever on either side, you know, that we had anything like, so I don't think so, not much.
Well, what happens is, from what I understand, what happens is that if you betray, and that's if you, you know, tell the truth about what's going on.
Tell the truth and shame the devil, right?
You are going to be, yes. I mean, you're going to be punished. Yeah, right?
Yeah. Because they always have their tribal objectives.
And that's another thing.
First.
Tribal objectives. Well, that's Zionism. Yeah. Put in all first. And that's the stab in the back in Germany as an example.
Yeah.
Of the tribalism. Yeah. Of the, you know.
Well, I thought it was really interesting with Dr. Sobrowski, because going back to World War One, the origins of it, we didn't even talk to him about World War Two, because I don't know if he agrees with us or not about that Germany were actually the good guys or not. I have no idea, but that was interesting about how World War One, the Austria-Hungary, we weren't able to get there yet, but the Austria-Hungary thing, that's because they had that system and everything. It was probably working really well, and that's what they were trying to crush, and like you said, trying to crush the monarchies and all these other things. That were, you know, the Federal Reserve and all those international banks were trying to take over everything. And Dr. Sobrowski wasn't putting those two things together, like with the usury and the economic thing. But they go hand in hand with the military stuff.
Well, I don't know that he wasn't putting them together. I just think he was focusing
what his expertise is.
And stuff I didn't know much about, which is the Serbian nationalism, that's all I know.
Right.
It was a Serbian nationalist, but I don't know the details around that.
Right.
That Gavrilo Princip was a Serbian nationalist. What I know is that he was a member of the Black Hand, which was a secret society. So, you know, there was, in all of these wars, it's always been exploiting nationalism for the interests.
And that's what's going on now, because you made that point earlier that the Patriots are the ones who, right now they're going after Antifa, but that's not going to stop them. You know, they're not going
to
stop there. That's right.
Yeah. So, okay, we got Antifa. Now it's your turn.
Now we come after you.
Yeah.
Right. So so those Patriots are useful idiots too. Incredible.
Holy shit.
I wish we would have had some callers
to say something
to
like that.
That would have been cool.
Yeah.
What's that?
I feel like I'm betraying myself when I say, you idiot, you useful idiot, to the Patriot.
Yeah. Actually, you just got a caller.
Wow.
You just got a caller now,
Gregory.
We got
a caller. Oh. Well, I thought I heard the caller, but who do we got here?
Hello, gentlemen. This is Stephen Whitener from South Carolina.
Steve,
hey, Stephen,
thanks for calling, man.
Yeah, I caught most of the last hour. I tuned away to catch what Trump had said about an hour, I guess, hour and a half ago, maybe. I'd wondered when he was going to come out and make some statement on this, and I don't know if y'all have heard any of it or not. I mean, I think it was like 6:45 or something, and he basically said that to the states and the cities that either you stop the rioting or he's going to send the military in to do so. And he was sending thousands of heavily armed soldiers and law enforcement on the streets of D.C. and going to start enforcing a 7 p.m. curfew. I don't know if that
sounds like martial law to me. I don't know.
It sure does. Absolutely.
Yep,
that's exactly what I thought. Yeah.
We've known it was coming one way or another,
amazing.
Right?
Yeah.
How's it going in your area right now? Are there
Gregory William, I don't know if you're aware, but Stephen Douglas Whitener here, he's been a host on Revision Media. He's got archives.
I wanted to call. Our great producer here, Richard, didn't let me know you were coming on until like 20. I don't know. It was right before. I didn't see the text until later. And I would have loved to call in like next time, but next time you're on the show, I'll definitely.
Thank you.
You know.
Yeah, I
Are
missed
you
the roundtable last
station?
Week, but I try to participate whenever I can. I've had one in the past. Yeah, I've got
things
that's going on personally that I can't be every week. But yeah, I try to make the roundtable at least every week if I can.
Wednesday night on this station.
No, that's on Thursday. Wednesday is Richard's show, Arcane Semantics.
Oh, okay, Thursday. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Thursday's the roundtable. Yeah. And well, you know, you're right. I mean, it sounds like martial law. And to get to, I'm near Greenville, South Carolina. I live just next to Greer. We call it Dark Corner. And they had some protests in Greenville. And I read that Antifa had targeted 7 different cities or towns in South Carolina. I don't know the list, but Pickens and Charleston were 2 of the other ones. And today I read a report of them out protesting in Charleston, South Carolina, but I haven't heard about riots there. There was some attempt to loot the Target here in Greenville on Woodruff Road, and the cops shut that down pretty quick. But so, I mean, so far it hasn't been as bad as the rest of the country. We have a pretty much another rhino governor here, just like in Ohio. He's not quite as – I don't think he's quite as bad as that, but he's still – I mean, we call him McTaxter. His name is McMaster. And he's pitiful, you know, the way he caved into the virus and the quarantines and stuff was pitiful.
Oh, yeah. We were bad here. Still is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, supposedly we're open back up now, but there's some things that aren't open. A pool I go to isn't opened up, and some of the restaurants are open, but they have half the tables in there. And there's some people still wearing masks, but that never did become a universal thing around here. The only business I know that required masks was Costco. Yeah, but hey, welcome to the network. I'm glad
great.
To hear you. That yeah, interesting. What do you guys think about this? Do you think do you think Trump is like in on this? And then, you know, that it's all this big orchestrated plan, because it sure looks like it from, you know, if I take a long view, it looks like this whole thing has been scripted out.
I think he's responding to it.
Yeah.
I he's definitely responding to it. I don't know that he's, he's part of a plan or not. A lot of people want
Trump
works for the Jews or whatever. I'm not convinced fully that he works for the Jews. I think there's a battle going on there. I'm not fully convinced yet.
Yeah, I don't get dogmatic.
I guess I'm still there with you.
I'm dogmatic about it, but I try to keep an open mind either way. But
that's what I'm doing too.
It's
I don't want to be a little hopeful that he is the nationalist that we think he is.
Yes, I would like that. You say, what were you dogmatic about? You think that he was part of it, or?
No, I said I don't really get dogmatic about it anymore.
Oh, you don't? I got you. I understand.
I used to get
dogmatic about the dialectic in general before I understood the dialectic. And,
yeah.
Right.
You know, that's an energy sink.
There's a lot of, he definitely keeps them close to him, and he definitely has them in his family and all that. I think it's a great bulletproof vest, really.
Yeah.
It's very true, that you keep your enemies closer, right? Your friends close, but your enemies closer.
I've heard that, and I think it was right after he made this speech. He walked out of the White House and walked across the street to St. John's Church and out in public, you know, kind of defying everything. And I thought that was pretty ballsy move for him to do that. And he took a Bible, and he took his Bible and stood in front of the church and held up his Bible and told the press out there that we got a great country. It's coming back, and it's going to be greater than ever. I mean, it was definitely a PR moment. You know, he did that. And I think he probably was responding
to it.
Right. He probably was responding to that headline that said he was hiding in a bunker while all this was going on.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know, that could be that he wanted to shut that up real quick.
Right. Hmm. It's not that scary.
Hiding in a bunker.
Well, I think
the president probably does that probably sometimes, you know.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, you got to go down there to direct everything. That's where he's got command and control. I'm not going to fault him for going what he's got to do, but the headline made it feel like the headline made it look like he was hiding from all this.
Well, the entire mainstream media hates him, all of it.
Yeah.
And Fox, with a little bit of exception, maybe doesn't as much, but still does.
Yeah.
So
I don't know what's happened to Drudge. Yeah, Drudge is the one that put that up today. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, you know,
well, the thing is,
gave it prominence.
It's basic math too. To know the whole media hates him. The whole media, and media is all owned by Jews. We all know that. It's not even a thing to argue about, right? They own that mainstream media. So
and they 24/7 or they want him dead. It's, you know, it's what it seems like. So that's one thing that makes me think that he's not working for them. That's all.
Yeah, I try to hold out some hope too. I really do. I mean, he disappointed me a lot. And initially, when he launched those missiles against Syria after that fake gas attack,
they didn't hit anything with that, and they gave him warning. And it was we covered that last show with Mike King was here, and we talked about that.
Yeah,
was all just a that PR
was,
move.
That was a big nothing burger.
Yeah, a
big nothing.
And so initially.
Nothing.
It initially really upset me, but
Massawi or the guy
that found out the details.
What was his name? That was
they took out that guy, but I think maybe that internally in Iran they wanted him gone anyway. I don't know about that either. That one I don't know. I can't speak to.
I know he's been involved with a lot of evil stuff, that guy that they assassinated, but
right,
you know, it was like somebody taking out Mike Pence. It was the number two guy there. It was definitely an act of war. You know, that's kind of troubling too.
Nothing happened there. I mean, obviously Russia is behind Iran now. I think that's what we all know. How much of this Russian collusion thing is
talk about the bad Chinese country?
What?
I don't know.
What do you think? What do you think about the banks in Iran? Who owns the banks in Iran? Who owns the
banks? They're nationalized.
The banks in Russia.
Well, that one I'm not sure about. I heard that they kicked the Rothschild one out, but then I don't know if they did or not. I don't know if they
I think it is still split in Russia. I don't think they've completely taken control in Russia. And just during this pandemic thing, for the first time ever, Iran applied for an IMF loan. And I saw this guy on and say that was their surrender, basically. And I don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't seen more about it, but that has happened.
Yeah, no, that's something
they never
wouldn't really publicize as much.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, God.
That's bad.
So, yeah, that's a bad sign. That's like the last domino to fall.
Right.
And from that moment, I forgot the guy who I saw – whose show I saw, he's a financial guy. It was on the Spiro Scores YouTube channel. He talked to him. I may be pronouncing his name wrong, but he does a lot of pretty good journalism. And this guy had said that from that moment, that meant that the New World Order was complete, that they had just that they had taken it over.
We know what has to do with the financial. Always control that.
Exactly. Yeah, it was right after.
But U3 is illegal in Iran. The way it works, I have an Iranian friend. We might have him on sometime. You could tell. He said that and basically in Iran, if you write a check and it bounces, you just signed your own death warrant. You know, the cops show up at your house like 3 days. Well, they don't kill you over it, but they'll arrest you for it. And if you sign a promissory note for a loan and you default on it, because the loans are only like 1-2% interest or something like that, very low. Mm. And if you have default on it, there's where you have basically signed your own death warrant. So, they don't allow for usurious interest rates, but they don't allow for you to not pay the loan either.
Yeah, I think it was that way in Libya too, wasn't it?
That would make sense.
I believe it was the same
way.
Well,
in real Islam, it's forbidden. Usury is forbidden.
Yeah, no usury at all.
None.
Mm-hmm. Used to be the same way in Christianity, but...
Right.
Yeah, that's
we get into this problem where we have is the Old Testament and New Testament. Are they compatible? Is the Old Testament, the first five books especially, are they compatible with Christianity? I say absolutely. Hell no, they're not. Zero compatibility. Yeah. The both of those books were put together
for
the wise to compare and contrast. Wise people will compare and contrast them, not considering them one thing. Now, where E. Michael Jones is supposed to be, Dr. E. Michael Jones is supposed to be on the show next week, and that's a really good question to put to him because what does he think about the Old Testament being compatible with any of the, I mean, especially the first five books. Let's call it that. Are the first five books of the Old Testament, are they compatible with Christianity? I would argue that Proverbs and things like that are, yes. You know, Psalms and all those ones, those things. But the first five books, do they have any compatibility? I don't think so.
It's compatibility is an irrelevant word when it comes to Christianity.
Judaism, its entire basis is out of those first five books of that. That's where the Torah and the Talmud are derived from. Both of them are just practical expansions of it, of the Old Testament. I'm saying
that it's for historical reference. That's why those are there. That's the problem that Christianity solved was those five books.
What the hell is Judeo-Christianity? That's an oxymoron.
It's the stupidest thing ever. Yeah.
Dumbest thing
Christian
in the world.
Christian Zionism is the dumbest move in human history. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that.
So, being in the South, Steve, right? I am sorry.
Okay. Yes, yeah. Steven. I'm from the South Carolina. Yeah.
You've been here your whole life in the South.
Yeah,
right?
Pretty much. I just about.
And so, what has been your experience with Christian Zionism in the South and people? Are there a lot of people that are woke to the JQ in the South, or are there just a lot of people that
are? No, there are some, but you know, it's not as there. The history of the South, basically, the people here owned the cotton, and then the Jews owned the mills in the mill villages over, you know, historically. And that's been the towns that grew up around that. And there weren't very many Jews here. I mean, they've been some since the state was founded back in Charleston, but there hasn't been a huge amount, you know, not a large interactive. There was the mayor of Greenville, what used to be a Jewish guy, and he brought in a lot of globalist, you know, influence here too. They tried to like make it an international city. It's a pretty nice place still, but it's getting worse. And there's a university here close to me in Greenville. It's called Bob Jones University, and it's like this ultra fundamentalist Christian place. I mean, it bills itself as the world's most unique university, and some of the people there are aware of it. They said that they thought that the Israelis were not. The first person that ever told me that the Israelis weren't the real Jews came from there, you know, to tell me that they were
such a thing as real Jews. It's all made up, always has been from the beginning.
But he was saying that these were, he was the first one to tell me about the Kazarians. He's the first one that brought that up to me, and he was one of their professors. I mean, I didn't go to that school, but I knew some of those people. When I was in high school, the strings teacher, her girlfriend actually was a teacher there. And of course, they came after this couple, and this one. That's how I got to know those people. And some of them are, and some of them aren't. I don't know if it's an official policy of the school or anything. Somebody else would probably know that more. But I have not known many Jewish people during my lifetime, but you know, I heard somebody say, you know, they're not, it's just because somebody is Jewish doesn't mean that they're, you know, evil or part of this. The man who gave me a stack of David Irving books was Jewish, you know?
Right.
And so I've having some of the best people I've known have been too, that were awake to this.
Well, the ones that tell the truth about it are on our side. Mm-hmm. That's the ones those are the ones, of course. Then
you're the Ashkenazi Jew that woke me up too.
If you can leave it at any time, most of them never will. You can leave it at any time though, and the ones that do, they're our comrades, no doubt about it. They got to be. They got inside information too.
There's a pretty large group of
fortitude it takes to do that.
Yeah,
there's a group of Messianic Jews, you know, the ones that have converted to Christianity oppose Christian Zionism. Some of them do. Yeah, I don't know exactly what the sect or the church is called, but I've seen several people come up on
that's Messianic
the channels.
There's a sect down. My dad lives in Wilmington, North Carolina, and there's a church there. There's a temple there that's for Messianic Jews. Like, they have their own church to go to. I guess they believe that Christ is Christ.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure. Yeah.
Well, they oppose the Israeli Zionism anyway. They're opposed to Zionism. Right. I don't know enough about it to really go into what exactly they believe. But I have met a few that during my life that were aware of what was going on and were not brainwashed by the cartoon history of World War II that we've all been taught. You know, they realized they knew what happened. That strings teacher, her girlfriend had related to me, she crawled under barbed wire to get out of a ghetto somewhere in Europe when she was really small. I got a really good one here for you.
It's a very short paragraph to read. My friend Trevor Levante wrote, here it is. Judaism is a violent rejection of universal morality. Someone who chooses to divorce himself from humanity and live by the Judaic code of total warfare against non-Jews. When they become decent people who harbor no animosity towards humanity, they by definition cease to be Jewish. There's not one good word spoken about non-Jews anywhere in the Jewish religion. It is crucial for everyone to realize this fact.
Oh, and some of the stuff they write in the Talmud about us is just disgusting.
But what he's saying here is when they become decent people who harbor no animosity towards humanity, they by definition cease to be Jewish. So they are all free to leave it at any time. Very few do. The very few that do, they should be important comrades to us, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm saying that it takes a tremendous amount of fortitude for them to leave it because they have to leave their entire family.
They're getting everything. They control
like
the money.
It takes a tremendous amount of fortitude for us to come out and speak out about it too, because even our non-Jewish
families because look at all the things that can happen to you for doing that, just for naming them.
Right.
We're not blaming. We're naming. First of all, we're not blaming anybody. If anybody's at fault here, it's us for allowing it to happen. I wouldn't even blame them. I'm just naming.
Right.
I ain't blaming.
That's a great point. Yeah, that blaming is the wrong is such a blaming
that's
implies
like naming.
That you're lying.
I'm definitely naming.
Blaming implies that you're incorrect.
But here, right, exactly. But I like the last sentence of this paragraph. There's not one good word spoken about non-Jews anywhere in the Jewish religion. It is crucial for everyone to realize this fact. Okay, so that they don't have anywhere in any of their writings, in any of their books, and anything that has one good word to say about anything, any non-Jew.
Should I have him on the show?
Oh, I'm going to.
Call him.
No, tell us, we're going to have him on the show. Oh, yeah, he's one of my best friends in the world. He's just brilliant. Animal.
Steven, when are you?
Freaking brilliant.
When are you on?
I had a show on Thursday nights where the round table is on, and I try to participate in the round table whenever I can. It's just. I'm not scheduled for anything. Yeah, I can't. I'm not dependable enough at the moment to be every week. I have a few in the archives.
Gotcha.
That's just the honest truth.
I got a lot of other things going on. Right.
But
right. We appreciate you taking
welcome
your time
you.
To call in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. I'll be listening again. Thanks very much. I'm going to jump off here now, fellas.
Hey, buddy.
Okay.
Thank you. Call back anytime.
Right.
When you're
talk
on, I'll be there for the call in. All right.
Great. Thank you.
Hey, that
all
was
right.
Everybody. That
bye
was
bye.
Steven.
Steven, yes.
That was Steven Joseph Widmer, everybody.
Awesome.
He had a show on here on Revision Media where we do Following Dominoes every Monday night, 8 p.m. to 10.
Douglas Whitener. Stephen Douglas Whitener.
Oh, Douglas Whitener.
Yeah.
Stephen Douglas. I said Joseph, didn't I? I said his name
that's fine.
Completely wrong. I said all of it wrong. I just hey, Stephen, man. He was on. Yeah, dude, I said
it.
I buffed up his name anyway. Anybody wants to call in 855-492-6049. Hey, right on. It's been a good show, though. It really has.
Yeah.
Well, I'm running out of gas. Anybody got anything?
hang on for a second there.
Yeah, I hate to have the show just become this bitch session against Jews all the time, because that's not really what it's, they are, it is the biggest problem, though, so how do you not bring it up every time? How do you not?
Well,
I mean, it's the world's biggest problem, is the JQ. It always has been, it always will be. You know, and Stephen had touched on the Khazar theory, Khazar theory, well... I got another good thing. Let's see, it's about that Fred Trevor wrote this too. It's just a paragraph I'm looking for right here about the Khazars. Let's see here.
He says, where is it? Boom. Oh, here we go. The Quasar theory is so effing stupid. And let's just say it was true. Well, these imposters certainly did a hell of a job doing exactly as real Jews were doing for thousands of years before. Bottom line is, Judaism in all its forms is pure evil and always has been. This Quasar fake Jew nonsense is only a freaking distraction and fall guy for Judaism's evil ways. Okay, so they get to claim that, oh, well, they're not real Jews or whatever, and, you know, it wasn't Zionists or Quasars that were screaming, crucify him, right?
Exactly.
So, I mean, this has been a problem for thousands of years.
It's kind of irrelevant. It just nullifies the whole blood thing. It nullifies
right.
the whole
it's just
blood
a stupid argument,
thing.
That whole Quasar thing.
Well, no, I mean, it's not. I mean, it has a point. It does. It just
it has some merit. Yes, but what I'm talking about is the saying that they're not real. Yeah. There's fake Jews and real Jews. The bottom line is, like the paragraph says, that in all its forms, it's evil in all its forms. It doesn't matter which form it is. It's because there's not one good word spoken about anyone that's not Jew in their religion. It's evil, and the only ones that aren't evil anymore are the ones that do renounce it and. Don't harbor any animosity towards humanity, and don't go with their ways. And they tell us all about what Judaism's evil ways are. Those are, and we've made that point already. Those are our friends, Dr. Sobrowski. There's one. He came on. You know,
yeah.
Jewish dude. So you know,
and David Cole. You know, I know that he had problems later, but look at the work he did. I mean, look at that fantastic.
At first, and then didn't he get in trouble? Like they banished him, and then he retracted a lot of stuff.
Yeah, Irv Rubin beat him up really bad. Irv Rubin was a gangster, and it was
like literally beat him up.
Oh yeah, like physically beat him up.
Wow,
I understand. Yeah, I mean, look.
Oh, I believe it, man, because he tried. Then started saying he retracted everything. Oh no, the gas chambers or whatever. I forget what he did, but he said something like he retracted it all and started saying, yeah, they were because he was this Jewish dude speaking out that there was no Holocaust. And, you can't do that.
Then he limited it.
That's the bread
to
and butter,
Auschwitz,
baby.
Because that's where he went and looked at
Auschwitz. Oh, right, it was Auschwitz. He was talking about
the
Auschwitz.
Flagship.
Right, there were no, right.
Albeit marked.
Well, Auschwitz is definitely their shrine, right? It's their shrine. And because it was a hub station.
Flagship.
Oh,
right.
Definitely.
It's Disneyland.
Definitely. Yes.
Disneyland.
Oh, they're holding the entire world hostage with that lie. And the president just did sign something about Holocaust education. I mean, if they're going to keep up that stuff, there's we're never going to go beyond it. They've got to nationalize the media or something. That would be an answer, right? Nationalizing the media.
Right. That's exactly right. That is an answer. That is a solution. Just like nationalizing the bank. In order to have a bank that works for the people, how do you unify the people? So that's why
it's media.
That's the
they divide us with the media. They could unify us with it.
At least you have
they
to have cultural homogeneity, right? You have to have cultural homogeneity.
We don't have that.
So look what's happening in all the towns everywhere, right? The economy is going to shit, but there's apartments going up everywhere. There's all this new development. Who owns all these new developments?
Oh, everywhere. They're building 40 houses next to us. It makes me sick
to my stomach. Right. They're just completely changing the face of all the cities. They're corporatizing everything.
Yep.
It's sick. And they're just ruining. They're ruining any culture or any kind of character that anything has. And they're telling you, you have no culture. You have no culture.
Not
through the corporation.
They want a cultural Marxism is all about that.
Except for European cultures.
Right.
So
everybody else is okay. Black pride is fine. Asian pride is fine. Latino pride is fine. Name any other culture or race. They're fine. White pride is not okay. It is just not okay. It's almost illegal.
It is illegal.
To have any at all. But anybody, arguments with idiots.
It's miserable, right?
Yeah, right. You're not allowed to have any pride in any of your – and the whole black and white thing is a real crap anyway. We should be exact about our origins. We shouldn't talk – we shouldn't say white or black. I'm Irish and Italian.
Yes.
And there's some German.
Exactly.
That's the only thing we should
– so
that's how we should do
it. So the application
they hate that.
Is a half page longer. So what?
Yeah.
Make the space for more ethnicities in there. Right.
Right. They only put a few. They put, oh, you can pick white or black. What do you mean? I've got a bunch of, I have European heritage of Italian art. And then, okay, my mom's side is 100%
European
Italian.
American.
They're, whatever.
European,
yeah,
American.
They have to be a good one.
At
yeah,
least
they,
do
why,
that.
They're going to do, yeah, well,
yeah,
they,
forget white.
They don't want us to
white,
have any connection
is,
to our culture. They don't want us to have any connection to our culture. No, we're not
exist.
Allowed to. No, they don't
want
us to exist.
Yeah.
Of course not. They want us gone.
They're ethnic cleansing us with apartments. The apartment next door is
right.
ethnic cleansing you and your family.
All right. We are being, as white people, as I hate saying
it's just
using
sad
the term
to watch.
White, I guess European descent, people of European
yeah.
descent, which
so
is
what can we do?
Who we are.
What can we do?
I don't know.
What can we do? What's the solution? Go. All right.
Well, we've named some solutions. Dealing with usury is huge, and so it would be nationalizing the bank and then nationalizing the media. So those are definite solutions that would change everything.
All right.
But
what can
humongous.
You do tomorrow?
But they're all owned right. by Jews. How do you do it? You can't. You can just keep coming on the podcast and naming.
How do you disconnect from it? Right? How do you create a system that's
yeah.
outside of it? It will be attacked. You'll
right.
be called a Nazi because you're just trying to be free
yeah,
of this usurious, like, genocidal banking system. You'll be called a Nazi for that. It's
well,
funny.
Then I guess
almost
I'm a Nazi.
Like, yeah, I guess so. It's like, oh, okay,
yeah, I guess
well,
so,
I, just,
right.
I want to survive.
I mean,
I just, want my family
they never
to
existed, so, I mean, there was no Nazi party. Nowhere in any of their writings or speeches were they ever called themselves Nazis. There was the NSDAP, the National Socialist German Workers' Party. I have a pair of authentic pins. Got one for my wife, one for me. It doesn't say Nazi on there anywhere. It says, I'm looking
yeah.
at a pin right now. It says National
yeah.
Socialista Deutschland. I can't even. That's what it says on
yeah.
there. But anyway, I've got real party pins. They're not Nazi party pins. They are NSDAP pins. So they're
yeah.
just a made up thing, man. They never fucking existed.
Well, so
sorry for the French there.
I know. So we can talk this all day. What's the solution?
Yeah.
And yes, the solution. The
well, that's what we need to do
is
talk about solutions. I would love to talk about more solutions on.
You know who has good ideas that I got the ideas from, is a woman named, she's been on Jeff Lawrence. She's an economist that actually used to work in the Bush administration. She's from Tennessee,
oh, wow.
and she's watching exactly what we're talking about happen to her town, and she's sick of it, and she's. She's talking to people, and the first time I was listening to her, she was talking to Sean from STP Report or Jeff Rentz or somebody, and she was talking about, or no, it was the economist guy. Oh, what's his name? Probably the same guy that Stephen was mentioning.
Right. Maybe. That sounds like it.
Yeah, the financial guy. Anyway, she was talking to him, and she's saying, talk to your local representatives. Because there are some that are good and want to do the right thing. And they need
well, oh,
you
so you're saying getting involved on a local level.
Them. Yes. They need you to invigorate them. And if you invigorate them, it will invigorate you. And that is a ripple effect. And seriously, like, I really can see it. The book coming out, how one man changed the world.
Right.
What do you think we can't?
That'd be great.
No. That's look what happened with the Second Amendment sanctuary that went just it blew up, right? One county declared it after what happened in Virginia, and the whole
right.
state, I mean, except for like three counties.
Well, that's
three counties
good.
And one township.
Do you have any kind of map or list of where who what counties
yes.
in America are to it? I wonder if
yeah,
there's any way you could put that on. I mean, I would like to get access to that.
Yeah, yes. So you can look on, you know, one, you can look on Virginia Citizens Defense League, vcdl.org. Virginia.
Victor, Charlie.
Yeah.
What, Larry,
Dog
David?
League.
VCDL.
Yeah,
David, Larry. Victor, Charlie, David, Larry. VCDL.
Yeah, vcdl.org, I think, yeah. or .com or something.
Okay.
And,
I'm writing it down.
You can find the list. And I'll dig it out some more. It's on other places.
Yeah, that's great.
You can Google it.
And for anybody know what. So what exactly can you define for us? What exactly a 2A sanctuary county is? What does that mean?
Second Amendment sanctuary. It's where the county commissioners have drafted a resolution to declare our county Second Amendment sanctuary. We will not enforce these unconstitutional anti-gun laws.
Gun laws.
On the people.
And statutes. They're not laws. They're statutes.
If you have
right.
commissioners that is making a stand like this, think about the bravery involved in this. Think about the resolve.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Think about the media.
Well, if there's ever an argument for why you need an AR with 30-round magazines, it's for what I turn the TV on. I turn on the Electric Jew, and that's all I see is why I need that. Everywhere. I see why I need to have 30-round magazines. Yeah. Like, there's no question about it. It's confirmed every time, and I'm glad I got a stack of them. Yes. And I'm not in any hurry to give them up. I'm not going to. I don't think anybody ever should. Because, I mean, they're showing videos of the people getting mobbed, their truck, their big rig rolling through, and just getting mobbed with people all over. If you had a rifle in there, or even a high-capacity handgun, you could have just stopped all that, you know? Even just
the
AR-15 could stop it.
It's a very effective weapon. You can hit
it's
25 yards away.
It's
very
awesome,
accurately.
Awesome, awesome power. It's incredible how much power it has.
It's just... You can look through your sight with your non-dominant eye and hit your target 25 yards away.
Well, though I've got optics on mine that you can keep both eyes open and it'll superimpose on your target. Really cool.
Yeah.
I'm one of the builds I got. Yeah, they're pretty neat. They're great. You know, and you can get an entry level. You could buy one already put together or build your own. That's another thing about them. You know, and there's some really
especially a very easy one to get. Yeah.
Yeah.
In terms of the laws, it's a rifle. So you can
rifles aren't
the same. Pistols, you have to get like pistol purchase permits in some states. You can actually go
in
your
some
state,
areas.
It's not even your state, and you could buy rifles out of state. You don't have to be living in the state.
I would agree. So, what an effective tool the AR system is, though, and the M60, the M4 system and all that they use in the military, because that's why they're still using it. It is a highly effective platform. It's one of the greatest ergonomically, and manual of arms it's just so natural to use. The way everything's set up, like your thumb switch on the selector switch and things like that are all right. You know, and the optics and just the way they handle, and they're just got a ton of firepower. Everybody should have one, in my opinion. Everybody should have one. That's the great equalizer right there. If everybody's armed, an armed society is a polite society.
That's correct. And you'll notice that it's states that have relaxed gun laws that they have more open yards and don't have fences.
They have less crime, way less crime. It's significantly less if everybody's armed. But they have these people all thinking that the gun is the problem. It's not the gun.
Get the word out. Yeah,
well, we're trying. It's not the gun is the problem. And we know from the research
that
I've seen.
What was that phrase you said again?
What's that?
Remember the one earlier? You said, don't believe what you can't. Yeah, why would you believe what you're not allowed to question?
Well, that's the theme of the Falling Dominoes show. That's the theme of our entire show, is don't believe what you're not allowed to question.
Just keep repeating that mantra. Walk down the
street. Yeah, we should put it on a T-shirt. I agree. I would love to have that on a T-shirt and walk around with that and work, go to work with
idea.
It on there because it is. It's not even it's not offensive in any way, and it provokes thought.
Right.
You know, I think actually I stole that from Trevor. Actually, I might have. You know, I can't wait to get him on the show. I'm going to talk to him here soon. I'll call him and say, dude, you're coming on. Or I'm mad at you forever. So no, he'll do it. Because we're really good bros, he'll do it. So I don't think he likes doing that. He's a great writer more than he likes to get on. He used to have a show on Truth Cat Radio with Richard and all these other guys. But he doesn't really like doing radio as much. You know, he's more of a writer type.
Is this radio, what we're doing?
Yeah, because we're just talking. It's audio, right? I mean, I have a face made for radio. I'm sure yours is too, buddy. Just kidding. Right? I don't think I'm made for TV. No, I wouldn't mind doing that either. If we had more technology capability of actually having the video thing, where they do an interview, that would be cool. But that takes an investment. I'm not ready for that yet.
Maybe we'll get to that next week.
You got E. Michael Jones coming
out. Yeah, I haven't confirmed with him yet, but I did have a confirmation from when he sent me that he was going to do it. So I will, like, in a few days, I'll try to touch base with him.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so we're supposed to have Dr. E. Michael Jones on, and wow, that'll be something else. The one thing I want for the show.
I listened
to
him over the weekend. I'm listening to him today too.
One thing I like for the show is that we want to get people on that are much smarter than us. You know,
he does have some talks.
I definitely want people smarter than me on this show. Definitely.
I get lost so far, so good. Some of this. So I'm like, yeah, that's good. Cause, I gotta go back and listen again and try to grapple with it.
Right.
Well, Gregory,
esoteric conversation.
I still look forward to, the other guest, where we had a mishap for Memorial Day.
Yeah, I want to bring it up. Monica Schaefer, we do want to get her on.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah. Last week we had technical difficulties. The website wasn't working. We couldn't get logged in. So we really want to apologize to Monica for that. And we're going to reach out to her. I think my Facebook account, I don't think I can post or use because I got a warning, another strike. I don't think I can do anything for a while. So I think that was the way I had to get a hold of her. If you could get a hold of her, Willie, that would be great. You know, let her know.
That's
I tell you that you tried
too.
Already.
My account got put into a, you must upload your ID state.
Oh, that one. Yeah, but you have another one, right?
They're trying to hand me over to William Barr. They're trying to hand me over to the pre-crime unit.
Right.
Like, oh, you're talking.
Yeah, they want to know who everybody
about
is.
The wrong thing. You must be thrown in the gulag.
We need to reschedule her. I would, you know, after next week, we can get her on.
Yeah.
Because I can't wait to hear her story. For everybody to know that she was arrested for basically what I'm going to call Holocaust denial. Her brother is currently in jail for Holocaust denial.
In Germany.
Right.
She was in jail in Germany.
She also got in trouble for it, right?
Escaped.
She did?
She was there for 10
She got out of there.
And then they were trying to drop new charges, and people were telling her, you need to get out of Germany, and you need to get out now. And she did.
Right.
And she escaped. And I mean, it's like 007 or something. You know, it's just
crazy.
It
is, man.
Stuff.
It's amazing because if you deny the Holocaust anywhere in the world and you show up to Germany, you are considered a criminal and can go to jail. It doesn't matter where you did it. If you step into Germany, you know. You're a criminal. They are the most cucked population, and I know that some of them are very hip to. They have the USA thing, something Cedar Adolf, our blessed Adolf. You know, that's what that's kind of the code they have. I heard it's called USA. You know, because in German,
initials
turn out our blessed Adolf. So that's the only way they can really communicate to people that are hip to it there, because it's legislated by law that you're not even allowed to talk about Hitler. In Germany, or you will go to jail for just talking about him. Now, I think that's I hate to compare Hitler to Christ, even though there are some comparisons. That was the first Christians after Christ was murdered. It was the same thing. Yeah. They weren't allowed to talk about him, right? Really, they weren't. So, and look where he's been ended up and be put. So, you know, I'm not saying that Hitler is a Christ level, but you know what? In my house. He's a pretty important guy, you know.
Yeah.
So, because he did a lot of the same things we're fighting them. The Christ was.
Nah, it's just the truth. It really is.
Yeah,
it's just the truth.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
Hitler truth is very powerful. It changes your life. It really does. You can't look at the world the same once you find out about what really.
Exactly, you know? It totally changes your entire paradigm. Yeah,
everything. He's so central to everything. We talked about that Godwin's principle.
The linchpin.
You know,
like the linchpin.
Right. It is.
It's like if
he's so central. That's why every argument eventually goes to Hitler comparisons. Like every argument will eventually go.
You
want to
be a nationalist?
Right. All right. Then you're.
And then people start to figure out. People start to figure it out. Candace Owens kind of blew it, honestly. Like,
I don't know.
I mean,
I was trying to get her on the show. She hasn't answered me.
Well, okay. I mean, I couldn't believe what I saw. So the Senate Judiciary Committee or the House Judiciary Committee, I don't remember, but what's his name? Nadler, you know, Jewish guy, Bolshevik, you know,
yeah.
tells you to silence you and all this stuff. Well, so there's another Tom Chu or Dan Chow or somebody from California, some deli, some liar, some communist, oh, yeah. God, just complete, goes, I want to play back a video of Candace Owens talking about Hitler and, like, making light.
She, I don't think she knows that much about him.
No, she clearly either doesn't or she's yeah. just...
She got in trouble for not signing the pledge or speaking out about not signing the pledge for Israel or something in Congress, right? She was a congresswoman, right? It wasn't that her thing?
No, she basically ran out.
No?
No, no, no. That's,
what was she?
That's not Candace Owens. Candace Owens is a younger gal.
Who am I thinking of?
She's also African American black.
I'm thinking of Cynthia McKinney. Who I've been trying to get old. Candace Owens is a different girl. I know now who you're talking about. Yeah, she doesn't know anything about it.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So she started just going, Hitler was a madman. Because they were accusing her of praising Hitler. And then, you should have seen the smug look on this guy's face, this Tom Chow guy, just looking at her like some kind of like Mao Zedong looking at somebody.
You're literally not allowed to say anything good about the man ever.
He's just sitting with his fingers moving them around. He's moving his fingers around each other. He's putting his fingers in a circle,
rubbing his hands,
and he's sitting there moving them around while he's like staring down at her. As she answers with his like fat cheeks hanging open. And it's just the most hideous thing. Cause it's such a lie what he's doing. He's just so grotesque.
Screw those scumbags. Actually, Cynthia McKinney, I would love to get her. Yeah. That's who I was talking about because she was in Congress and they ran her out of Congress for talking about Candace Owens would never come on this show. So no, but Cynthia might, because she was ran out of Congress
She might. Yeah,
but,
she might.
Yeah, she might. If we can get her, You're trying to get a hold of her.
Right.
Because Facebook is the only avenue I have. And people that are like public figures, sometimes they don't answer their Facebook stuff, you know. So,
when you're really going there, some people want you to go there more gingerly with people. And we don't really do that.
Yeah. No.
We don't. We've already been gingerly.
We're pretty much in their face. Yeah.
It's like, man.
That's a great question for Dr. Jones. How do we approach the Jewish problem, the Jewish question, without sounding like, insane? How do you approach it?
So,
because Dr. Jones is doing a very good job of that because he does talk about the Jewish question a lot.
He's incredibly insightful into the whole thing. Incredibly insightful into it. The only thing that he doesn't really, I don't think he's really all that.
No, World War II.
About Hitler. Hitler.
He's probably not on board with Hitler, and that's too bad because it is sensitive.
Writes Hitler off as like it was all about blood, and Hitler was like the product of his time and stuff like that. So I respect him a lot. I don't want
to. We don't have to ask him anything about Hitler at all. That's not even.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even think that should be anywhere to go with it.
But I do respect his approach on how to handle, because here's the thing that he points out, because how he handles race, the term of race, the issue of race.
Oh, okay.
Right. And so he goes, don't identify as white because that's how they can defeat you. And
I
I'm
agree.
Like, that makes sense. And a lot of these guys are like, these other guys are like, whoa, dude, you're like a race traitor. And it's like, well,
be exact about your origins.
Yeah. It's like, no. Cause when you become white, then you get into their category. And he explains the history of that and how that evolved over in his book, The Slaughter of Cities, how they took the different European ethnicities and pushed them out of places in like Pennsylvania and upstate and, different places.
Okay, but then Jews get to identify as white when it's beneficial to them and and they're the ones that are pushing all that anti-white stuff. And then they're also the ones that'll say fellow white people. But then as soon as you call them on it, oh, well, I'm not white.
Right.
I'm a Jew. Or the only time they're ever white is when they get caught doing something illegal. Then they're never Jewish. They're white. Always. In the press. You're never going to hear about them being Jewish. Like they get caught doing something. Like, he's white. White guy.
And the bank CEOs do this kind of shit. So what you can do is you can pull your money out of the banks, out of the big banks, and try to find a local credit union This is actually a solution to the problem.
There you go. That's a great solution.
And bankrupt the big banks. Right? Bankrupt them.
Pulling your money out of banks and putting it into a local credit union. That is a great – and try to do all your banking business through the credit union. That's a good way to start, because on this show where we don't believe what we're not allowed to question, we also want to talk about solutions. We don't want to just bitch. We don't want to just scream about Jews all day, because that's really – they're not to blame for this. We are. They are not to blame for it. We can name them for what they're doing, but they're not to blame. They're not.
We have a – yes. We have allowed ourselves to be eroded. We have allowed ourselves to become degenerate. We have allowed ourselves to become detracted.
They're just taking advantage of us.
We have allowed ourselves to become detached from God.
We only got a few minutes left for tonight's show. It's been amazing, having somebody like Dr. Alan Sobrowski on. I could probably pick that guy's brain until I just passed out, you know. So just get him for an hour. That was an honor. And then
That'd be great to
we
have
Dr. Mike. Yeah, right? We'll get him back sometime. And then hopefully we get Dr. E. Michael Jones on. He's been receptive to coming on, even if, you know, as far as I know, it's next week. And I'll let you guys know about that. And we got to get a hold of Monica. So we do have some ideas for the show. And as always, anybody can call in here at Falling Dominoes. On Revision Media, where we don't believe what we're not allowed to question. Right, Willie?
Exactly. Yes. We don't believe what we're not allowed to question.
We don't. William Red Pillum is our and me. I'm Greg McGill. This and our producer, Richard Carey, tonight of the Falling Dominoes program. Thank you very much, Richard, for everything.
Thanks, Richard.
Excellent show.
Yeah, I thought so. Thank you, man. Thanks, yeah. Yeah, looks like we got about, according to my my clock right here, we got about 30 seconds left until 10 o'clock.
The show's very cathartic for me.
It is. I've been really enjoying it. I'm glad we're doing it.
We got
riots
all over the country right now. The economy's being crashed. We've been going into this for a really long time, and we're in it. We're in it now. It's crazy.
We're in it, man. That's right.
We need a place to come and talk. And hopefully other people can
open for them.
Get a catharsis through us, you know, vicariously.
Exactly. There you go. All right, everybody. Well, don't believe what you're not allowed to question. We'll see you next week at Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Falling Dominoes.
Thank you.